Hello, this is Sandra Ferguson with the Friday, April 20th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. And we will begin on the front page with a piece from the Champaign County Board called Nursing Home Management Deal in Jeopardy. With three Dems absent, vote that would extend contract failed by Tom Kasich, Urbana. Republican members of the Champaign County Board on Thursday night voted down automatically renewing a contract with the management company that runs the county nursing home, potentially leaving the facility without a manager at the same time the county is trying to sell it. The vote to renew the contract with Northfield-based SAK Management failed 10-9 on a party line vote. Three Democrats, Shana Jo Cruz, Stephanie Furtado, and James Tinsley were absent from the meeting, giving board Republicans a rare opportunity to win a partisan vote. But after the meeting, Republicans wondered if they had gone too far. Their intention, Champaign Republican Jim McGuire explained, was to send a message to SAK after a problem earlier this week when the company had to make a special request to pay a vendor that threatened to cut off service for lack of payment. Our intention is to try to push SAK and make sure they're doing their billing properly, he said. We want them working. Asked what would happen next, he said, "We'll see. Right now, they have a contract." County Board Chair C. Pius Weibel, a Democrat, said they could have made a motion to reconsider after the vote. I'm sorry, but they did it. Hopefully, they'll step forward now and help us run the nursing home. Another GOP board member said an effort would be made to call a special meeting next week to clarify the vote. For now, the county's contract with SAK runs until May 31st. The motion that was voted down Thursday night would have extended it until July 31st. Thursday night's dramatics came as the county is attempting to sell the nursing home in East Urbana for $11 million to two Evanston-based companies. The facility is losing money and piling up bills. Board members Thursday night reviewed a balance sheet that showed that the home took in about $550,000 in March, but spent about $700,000. And it owes more than $4 million, about half of which is to various county funds. Among those owed money is SAK, which has about $122,000 in payments pending. The board is looking at a potential vote in late May on whether to accept the $11 million offered for the nursing home. Even with a favorable vote, the sale might not be closed for 60 days or longer. Earlier Thursday, at the Republican caucus session before the regular board meeting, McGuire and other Republicans fumed at Weibel for approving an emergency $40,000 payment Monday so the nursing home vendor could be paid. Without the payment, the vendor threatened to stop service, which would have kept the facility from getting toilet paper, hand soap, and other supplies. We need to understand what an emergency is. We need to have that defined, McGuire told Weibel. And we need a ruling from the state's attorney's office on how you were able to do that. How do you want me to do it? Call a special meeting? Weibel responded, noting that the quickest turnaround would require 48 hours' notice. They were running out of stuff, medical supplies. McGuire placed the blame on SAK. If they can't figure out that they're going to run out of toilet paper in 3 days, then they shouldn't be there, he said. And 660 stop signs okayed. County board members approved appropriating $336,000, mostly in federal funds, for the installation of 660 stop signs so that every rural intersection in Champaign County would have two-way coverage. If this prevents one death, it's worth it, said Republican Brad Clemens, who also is the road commissioner in Tolono Township, and said he already has placed stop signs at every intersection in his township. County engineer Jeff Blue said he hoped the installation of the signs would begin around the 4th of July. Blue said federal studies have showed that stop signs at intersections result in a 22% crash rate reduction. It establishes clear right-of-way at an intersection, he said. We're not naive enough to think that we're never going to have another accident at an intersection. There are people who don't pay attention to them. I know that. But we hope that we'll save lives. There were 11 intersection-related fatalities in Champaign County over a five-year period. That's two a year. If we can save one of those a year or one every 5 years, I believe it's well worth it to put the stop signs up. Blue said the signs likely would last 7 to 15 years. The county needs to be prepared to write another grant for this, Clemens told his GOP colleagues at the caucus session before the county board meeting. And next, from the Champaign-Urbana Astronomical Society, head here to see real stars. Ribbon cutting for observatory set on Saturday by Adalberto Toledo. On Saturday, the prairies of east central Illinois will seem a little closer to the stars. On its lot just southwest of Willard Airport, the Champaign-Urbana Astronomical Society will cut the ribbon on the Prairie Winds Observatory. It's been a four-year project for Dave Leakey, director of the William M. Starkel Planetarium at Parkland College, and astronomer James Waymer. But now they've got the ability to bring more people into their observatory to look at more stars in the sky and have room to expand in the future. When we first built the observatory, you could only get five or six people in there at once, and it wasn't ADA accessible, Leakey said. Now we have some place where a wheelchair could get in there, and we can get more people to look at the sky. And you can look at more of the sky, since the roof rolls out. The new facility is a 24-by-30-foot shed-like structure that will house the Society's four telescopes, which have been motorized so they can be used to look at more objects in a shorter amount of time. For the Society, these go-to telescopes are a step to a future that could include digital imaging. They will also make astronomical research easier and allow analysts to search for near-Earth asteroids, monitor lunar crater formations, follow the path of stars, and more. It's all ADA accessible now, too. For Waymer, though, refurbishing the group's 100-year-old 16-inch telescope named Ruby was the true test. It's now the pride and joy of the Society. That's our prime instrument, the flagship telescope, he said. It's the biggest go-to scope that we've got, and I get to put my name down in the history of it. I did that. Building the structure was mostly done with the contract work, volunteer hours, and about $36,000, mainly coming from Society members. The ribbon-cutting ceremony will be held at 3 p.m. Saturday and will be followed by a nighttime open house between 8 and 10:30 p.m. It's free to the public, and there's no need to RSVP. And if you feel like the weather is getting bad, call 217-351-2567 to check for cancellations. And next, we have a Q&A for Habitat of Humanity Volunteer of the Year. A real pride, 40 homes and counting for Villa Grove retiree. No matter how many more Habitat for Humanity houses he helps build, dedication ceremonies will never get old for John Warner. To me, that's a real uplifting experience, says the 66-year-old Villa Grove retiree. You see people who have not had an opportunity before to own a home, and now they have home ownership. There is a real pride. They dedicate the house, and somebody from a church gives a little prayer. It makes the whole thing special. Warner would know. Of the 102 homes Habitat of Champaign County has completed, he has been a part of 40. For that, the father of three was honored as the organization's 2018 George Kiefer Volunteer of the Year. Staff writer Tim Mitchell sat down recently with the 40-year FS dealer who spent most of his life in agriculture, be it selling and delivering feed to livestock farmers statewide as an adult or walking beans, baling hay, and raising cattle as a kid growing up on a farm south of Morris. I get to do a little bit of everything. A conversation with John Warriner. Tim Mitchell. How do you get started volunteering for Habitat of Humanity? I started work for Habitat back in the 1990s, but I couldn't help out very often because I worked Saturdays for FS. Once I retired, I knew that volunteering for Habitat was something I wanted to look into. I started volunteering every Saturday at whatever house they happened to be working on. Soon, Habitat started a small group of guys who would work during the week to help the construction crew on days when they didn't have volunteers, and I got involved with that group. Normally, I work 2 days a week with them. What kind of work do you do? We do everything from framing to siding to finished work to flooring. We put the trusses up and the sheeting on. We do all the trim work. We install the windows and doors. We hang the kitchen cabinets. We install some of the bathroom fixtures. We don't do plumbing or electrical or HVAC. One of the things I like about Habitat for Humanity is that I get to do a little bit of everything. Have all of your 40 Habitat projects been in Champaign-Urbana? All but in Gifford. I think I worked on 3 homes in Gifford after the 2013 tornado hit there. I worked with a guy at FS whose family had lost a house east of Gifford on a farm. He was in the house the day the tornado hit. I know a minister at the church there. Have there been any particularly memorable homes over the years? What I remember more are the people who are getting the homes. The part I like about Habitat is that it is a hand up, not a hand out. People work hard to get qualified for a home, and they have to work hours of sweat equity, both at the house site and at the Habitat Restore shop. They have a mortgage on that house. We built a home for a lady in Urbana who had a child with special needs, so we had to put some special handrails and do some unique things with doors. I understand those things have been a real benefit to that child. That's neat to hear. From start to finish, how long does it typically take to build a Habitat home? Probably 4 months. Saturdays are the big volunteer days. Occasionally, they will have other volunteer days through the week. We have a lot of groups that bring volunteers, ranging from students at Urbana High School to Lincoln's Challenge and a lot of companies. Yahoo has done builds. John Deere has done builds. We did an interfaith deal with all the churches in town building 2 homes. There's a Habitat group from the University of Illinois that does a build every other year. And we have a lot of people who volunteer as individuals. What's your best advice for someone interested in becoming a Habitat volunteer? You go online to Habitat of Champaign County, which will tell you when and where they will be working. You can sign up right online. All you have to do is show up. They will put you to work doing something you are comfortable with, and they will train you. If you don't like climbing a ladder, don't worry about it, because there is something to do on the ground. If lifting is too heavy for you on the days we are setting walls, don't worry about it, because there is something else to do. A few last personal questions. What do you like about living in Villa Grove? I like small town and country living. It is quiet. Yet we have many of the benefits of larger communities. We have a grocery store, we have banks, we have gas stations, we have some restaurants, and we have a hardware store. We are really pretty fortunate. Tell us something about you that most people don't know. Now they'll know. I sang in the choir at my church. I sang bass. It was just background sound. I'm not a good singer. What kind of truck do you drive, and what music is usually playing on it? I drive a Ford F-150, and it is always playing rock and roll. I particularly like Crosby, Stills, and Nash. How about your favorite food? Steak from Outback Steakhouse. Your top hobby? I do woodworking. I have built furniture. I make wine bottle stoppers and bowls and all kinds of stuff. Last one. The movie you could watch over and over is The Cowboys. I love anything with John Wayne in it. And next, from the Roger Ebert's Film Festival, Stellar Guests. And the first part is Selena Director Was There When the Eberts Needed Him Most by Paul Wood, Champagne. A bittersweet movie, a bittersweet moment. When Chaz Ebert introduced Gregory Nava, writer and director of the movie Selena, she told the Ebertfest audience about Nava himself. Nava was at the hospital bed when Roger transitioned and ended up staying to help out, she said Thursday. He'd been with the Eberts because they shared a love of opera and had hoped to go to one together. But on that day in 2013, Nava volunteered to help her out when Chaz Ebert was most in need. He canceled all of his appointments to help plan the memorial and funeral services, she said. At one memorial, Nava and directors Julie Dash and Andrew Davis all spoke, along with comedian and activist Dick Gregory and Chicago-area actors John and Joan Cusack. Nava repeated his respect for Roger Ebert, the Urbana native and Pulitzer winner. I look out at this theater, and you could fill this theater with filmmakers who owe their careers to Ebert, Nava said. Not a day goes by that I don't think of him. Some favorite moments? On its 20th birthday, Nava said Selena, a film about the life and tragic death of a Tejano superstar, is more popular today than it was then. Thousands of young women are influenced by the style of the late Mexican-American entertainer Selena Quintanilla Perez and love her music. After one event with the largest crowd ever, Nava said he was glad something positive could come out of this. Actress Jennifer Lopez, who starred in the movie, watched family videos of Quintanilla Perez in order to expertly dance like her and lip-sync her songs in Nava's movie. Lopez became a singer later, out of respect for Selena and her fans. The late star's voice was used in the film. Nava brought his personal print of the movie at the last minute. Other than a few scratches at the beginning, it looked perfect. This is the original poster for the film, he said. He signed it for Chaz Ebert and Ebertfest. When she joked, "Who do you think gets to keep it?" Nava answered, "Because of that, we got two." Nava said Lopez was at the center of the film. Though she'd been in an earlier film of his, she still had to audition. "I don't mind," she said. Nava got his second Thumbs Up award. The golden thumb back a few years ago was kind of pewter, he said. Now I have two thumbs up. The moment in the movie when a 9-year-old Selena wows her father with a stunning singing voice. Documentary images of fans mourning the loss of Selena. After the movie, answering a question by reviewer and moderator Claudia Puig, Nava said studio bosses told him there were no Latina stars, even though there were male ones. He told them there were plenty. They just had to be found. And also from Ebertfest, sci-fi blockbuster impressive even for astrophysicists by Frank R. Pieper, Champagne. Introducing Thursday's showing of Christopher Nolan's science fiction blockbuster Interstellar, RogerEbert.com editor Brian Tellerico called it the biggest movie in this festival and a $20 million movie about love. He couldn't have been more right, although the first half of that description was probably more in reference to the 70mm print of the film to which the Virginia Theater audience was treated Thursday at Roger Ebert's Film Festival. But the emotional impact of a film best known for its special effects and careful adherence to real-life science impressed even the pair of scientists invited to reflect on the movie afterward. Mexican astrophysicist Miguel Alcubierre said the idea for Interstellar came from the mind of his academic grandfather, Nobel laureate and theoretical physicist Kip Thorne, who served as consultant on the film and actually recommended him as an Ebertfest guest expert, according to Chaz Ebert. With him was fellow astrophysicist and University of Illinois graduate Brand Fortner, who noted that since Alcubierre's field of numerical relativity was created at the U of I, he too was an offspring of Illinois. Fortner concurred with the film's premise that mankind was born on Earth. It was never meant to die here. Citing the dangers of a meteor strike, the sun burning out, global warming, or other natural disasters, Fortner concluded, "At some point, we have to leave Earth. Only this film and 2001 have dealt with this." Fortner also likened Interstellar to Stanley Kubrick's 1968 sci-fi opus 2001, Space Odyssey, as the only two sci-fi films who took their science seriously and got it right, at least for the most part. But he agreed the emotional impact of Interstellar and its sub-themes of parenting, separation, and death far outweigh that of 2001. He even went so far as to risk disagreement with the festival's namesake. Roger was wrong, Fortner postulated. He said movies are empathy machines that generate empathy for other people. They are empathy machines for the universe. Critics have their say. Consider Rotten Tomatoes a welcome addition to EbertFest. The film and TV review aggregation website sponsored Thursday morning's panel discussion at Hyatt Place in downtown Champaign, and it went surprisingly well, considering that it featured 13 professional movie critics plus one more as moderator, all with something to say about the state of movies and film criticism today, and all within a one-hour time slot. All right, so it ran nearly a half hour beyond that. But credit moderator Claudia Puig, longtime reviewer for USA Today, for managing mic time for all 13 of her fellow critics. Not an easy task, considering her panel included the likes of author-historian Leonard Maltin, Chicago Sun-Times critic and Ebert's former at-the-movies sidekick Richard Roper, and his counterpart and friendly rival at the Chicago Tribune, Michael Phillips. But if their fellow panelists were somewhat less well-known, their comments were no less insightful, from discussing movies' roles in the adization of our culture, as coined by MovieMom.com's Nell Minow, to their usefulness in real life, Matt Zoller cites, editor-in-chief of RogerEbert.com. I use watching movies as a kind of mental calisthenics. It's the mental bench press of our time. To the issues of racial and sexual diversity in the field of film criticism itself, Scott Mance of TV's Access Hollywood. You have to have the same reflection of gender balance and diversity in the people reviewing the films as you do in the people who are actually seeing them. Other film critics on hand to discuss the present and future of their business included Susan Wolzinia, Rebecca Theodore Vachon, Sam Fragoso Tellerico, Matt Fagerholm, Sheila O'Malley, and Sarah Adamson. The event was the first of four panel discussions scheduled each morning of EbertFest at Hyatt Place, all of which are being live-streamed at the festival's website. And now in the opinions page, we will begin with an editorial called "Rauner Has Two Election Foes. A third-party candidate for governor isn't really running to win." Politics is about addition and subtraction, adding votes to one side of the ledger and removing them from the other. That's why Democrats were pleased this week when renegade Republican State Senator Sam McCann of Plainview announced that he's running for governor as a third-party candidate and billing himself as the conservative in the race. McCann has zero chances of winning, but almost every vote he gets will be a protest vote against incumbent Republican Governor Bruce Rauner, and consequently, a de facto vote for Democrat J.B. Pritzker. No wonder Pritzker was delighted that McCann entered the race. "I welcome another voice to the race for governor at this critical time for our state," Pritzker said in a statement issued by his campaign. Rauner responded with disgust to McCann's move, denouncing McCann as the worst kind of political opportunist who is running for governor to line his own pockets. Indeed, Rauner's statement was so strong that he seemed to go overboard. McCann's unethical record speaks for itself. He failed to pay his taxes, racked up massive debts, lied about serving in the Marine Corps, and used his campaign account as a personal piggy bank, even buying himself an SUV, Rauner said. Since this is Illinois, there's already political subterfuge underway. Public and private sector labor unions are a key part of the Democratic Party coalition. That's why they exercise outsized influence in the formation of public policy here. And their enmity for Rauner is not exactly a secret. While backing Pritzker, one union already is giving financial support to McCann. Working under the theory that the enemy of my enemy is my friend, the International Union of Operating Engineers contributed $50,000 earlier this week to the McCann campaign. Consider it an investment in Pritzker's future. McCann, who was elected to the Senate in 2010, announced earlier this year that he would not be a candidate for re-election to that body. It's no great loss. Few Republicans have any influence in the Democratic-controlled House and Senate, and McCann has even less than those who have little. He distinguished himself principally for his vote to overturn Rauner's veto of legislation that would have stripped Rauner of authority to negotiate a contract with state employees and turned that authority over to a third party. Limited to just one governor, Rauner, for this one negotiation with AFSCME, the bill was part of a Democratic power play to financially reward one of the members of its political coalition at a time when the state is effectively bankrupt. Suffice it to say, it's one of the worst bills the legislature ever passed. McCann said he voted for it because a large number of his constituents are state employees. At any rate, that difference of opinion between Rauner and McCann set the stage for what has become a bitter feud in which each man has tried to end the political career of the other. That's what McCann wants out of his proposed campaign for governor, an effect that will require a substantial voter petition effort to qualify for the ballot. But that shouldn't be a problem. McCann wants to bring Rauner's tenure as governor to an end. So do the Democrats. That's why McCann's candidacy is win-win for these unlikely political allies. And in the From Our Readers section, a piece by Anne Quackenbush of Champaign called Show Up and Talk with Constituents. In the April 15th News Gazette, just 2 months after the Parkland school shooting, Rodney Davis wrote, "From Congress to law enforcement to schools, we all have to be part of the conversation and part of the solution." This was 10 days after Davis first claimed not to have been invited and then outright refused to participate in this very conversation at a town hall organized by local students. A dozen individuals and organizations addressing gun violence came, including students from area high schools and the University of Illinois, political representatives like Senator Scott Bennett and state's attorney Julia Reitz, and community leaders like school superintendent Dr. Don Owen and Joby Taylor, who is part of the Truce Anti-Violence Initiative. Betsy Dirksen-Londrigan was there and expressed her support of the Second Amendment and real reform to protect our kids. Rather than engaging in the conversations he says are needed, Davis seems more interested in holding closed-door meetings to limit the discussion to a select few who won't challenge his views. What about teachers like myself and others who don't believe schools should have more armed security? What about parents and grandparents of students who don't want our children going to schools that will look more and feel more like prisons if Davis had his way? We need a representative who will listen and talk openly with us. The conversations Davis says he wants are already happening. Davis is the one who refuses to engage. And we'll take a short break now and return with the second half hour of the Friday, April 20th, 2018 edition of the News Gazette. I'm Sandra Ferguson. Please stay tuned.